Apologize for the acting salesperson that could not make it. She sends her condolences and her regards. And also the chair of the audit that could not make it. I'm representing the team here. I would like to introduce the team to us. On my left hand side, I have our CEO, Mr. Marlow, our CFO, Mr. Mayepa, our company secretary, Ms. Mabe, and our COO, Mr. The CEO will be taking us through the presentation, and we will hand over to him. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Noah. Chairperson and members of the committee. we are humbled by this opportunity to attend before this committee for the second time. Chairperson, we are here to really share with you our annual report, which has been crystallized into a presentation that we will take you through. But then before I did it, Chairperson, I really need to say that CPRCA has been embarking on an incredible journey, Chairperson. It has been a journey of organizational rebirth and transformation. The last 5 years has indeed been an incredible story for us. We've come from the doldrums. We were one of the worst, if not the worst, performing entities just 5 years ago. And in this sense, all indications are that we are no longer in the ICU. This is how we were characterized when we had appeared before this committee. By the chairperson who said the CBRJ was in an ICU. I can safely say we're not even in hospital. The outline of the presentation, chairperson, we will talk to the vision and mission, the mandate, the strategic imperatives, just a brief reflection on the environment in which we operate, cross-border environment. We'll give you a review of our organizational performance. We'll take you through our strategic projects, strategic partnerships, some of the development and empowerment programs that we are embarking on, issues of employment equity, the financial information, audit outcomes, and we'll also try and reflect by looking into the future chapters, but also would like to speak to key challenges and intervention areas before we get to our concluding remarks. Chapters, the vision of the CBRCA is to be the leading cross-border road transport agency in the region. We're one of three such agencies in the entire SADC region. Most of the other countries do not have agencies that are specialized in doing the kind of work we do. They do that mainly through their department, the Ministry of Transport. But we are one of the three countries that have actually established a dedicated cross-border road transport agency to look after issues of regulation of cross-border movements in the road space. Our mission here is to spearhead social and economic development within the SADC region, and this we do by facilitating unimpeded or unhindered or smooth flow of cross-border road transport. By smooth flow of cross-border road transport, Chairperson, we are looking into what are the impediments that delay or prevent the movement, efficient movement of people and goods between South Africa and any of our neighboring countries, because indeed, as you would know, Chairperson, we are a small country of only 50 million people. For us to be able to grow the economy and the percentages that are projected, for us to be able to achieve our objectives as a country in terms of rolling back on unemployment, on poverty, on inequality, we really need to integrate with the rest of the African continent and see ourselves, not just as a small market of 50 million people, try to tap into this 1 billion numbers that we have in the continent. And this is where the strategic importance of an entity like the CRPA comes in. Our strategic oriented goal here is to really enhance the organization, the performance of the organization. The reason why it is paramount for us as a person is because we come from an organization that was totally dysfunctional. The organizational performance at one stage was our most critical challenge. And that's why it became the number one priority, not because we wanted to be internally focused, but it was out of appreciation that you needed to have the capacity first to do the things you are enjoined to do by law before you can then start tackling the challenges of a strategic nature that are facing this entity. And those are the facilitation of free flow of people and goods across the entire region, promotion of regional integration, promoting safe and reliable transport in the cross-border environment, and strategic positioning of the entity to enhance our organizational sustainability. Chairperson, when you go to the Act, the founding Act, Act No. 4 of 1998, it articulates the mandate and the strategic imperatives of the CBRCA. And these are stated as follows. This agency was established for the purpose of eliminating impediments in the flow of passengers and freight by road across regional borders. This entity was established to introduce regulated competition in cross-border passenger transport movement. It was also established to liberalize market access in respect for cross-border freight transport. This we are supposed to achieve here by reducing operational constraints for the cross-border road transport industry, by also strengthening the capacity of the public sector, and thirdly, by building partnerships with the ferry operators who apply their trade on these cross-border corridors. Just to give you a sense of the cross-border environment, we've tried through the map to depict all the major ports of entry are located, not just the purple, because when you think through the whole venue chain, we're also concerned about what length from the port, whether it's Durban, whether it's far, whether it's Cape Town, and how it's then trajected and transported through the whole country. And therefore, that means part of our concern is with the corridors themselves, the exchange of the corridors, and right up to the border posts. And the border posts tend to be the biggest bottleneck that depends on the ability of us to trade and to effectively move goods between South Africa and any of our trading partners in Africa. Africa is increasingly becoming the most important trading partner to us, and it makes natural sense that it is so, because from a core geographic point of view, Africa and us, the proximity implies that Africa should be our biggest trading partner. And we know that 7 of the fastest growing economies in the world are located in this region, and therefore that also impels and actually speaks to the growth that is being realized in terms of the amount of trade that is taking place between South Africa and our neighboring country. But it's not just in the whole area of trade where we engage with the SADC country, but also in the area of people movement. We've seen an incredible movement of people between South Africa and the rest of the countries within the SADC region like we've never seen before. Prior to 1994, we were a prior state. No African ever thought of coming to South Africa. But today, wherever you go, even in restaurants, you find that sometimes even the majority of people who are employed there are non-South African. People come from other countries in our neighboring countries. And this social cohesion, there's this greater appreciation of one another, but also it has its own challenges, especially so far as human trafficking and people who are coming here illegally are concerned. And we have a role to play in that respect, and also protecting the integrity of the country and ensuring that South Africa is able to regulate the movement of people in a proper manner. Just in terms of organizational performance, we've had 65% of target that we were able to achieve. This was Jefferson, even though it's only 65% and not 100%, represents the overall performance improvement of 17% when we compare with the previous financial year. And therefore we feel that it is a direction, it's in the right direction. We will by no means aim to have achieved and being where we would want to be, but 65% we certainly feel that by any standard should be considered a pass mark. And indeed we are proud of the fact that 65% comes at the back of an improvement of 17% when you compare us with the previous strategy. In this instance, we achieved 40% of the targets that we had, the 62 targets, and 40 of those were achieved to the tune of 100%. Those that were not achieved to the tune of 100%, we are not even recognizing them, even though some of them were achieved to the tune of about 98%. But we are only mentioning those where we achieved, because that's how the Auditor General views the performance. So in our view, this was a significant progress with many of the other indicators during the financial year, and where we had battles before, we established recovery plans, and we were able to put this to bed. And we did all of this without the benefit of any funding. And sometimes it's important to really share this point, Jefferson. We are the only entity among entities that reports to the Minister of Transport that doesn't get a cent from budget. We generate our own upkeep. We are totally self-sufficient as an entity. This is a strategic challenge for us, but notwithstanding that this being a strategic challenge, we've still been able to achieve what we've been able to achieve. Some of the key organizational performance achievements that have been taken to increase in industry development programs implemented to support cross-border operators. This speaks to an area where historically we really not had historically black or even women operators in the cross-border terrain. This has been an exclusive preserve of the historically established white entities or organizations that existed pre-1994. And we set this as our target to say, let's assist and try and change the future of the cross-border operating environment. We're also able to complete 8 road surveys in Zimbabwe, Rwanda, Malawi, Botswana, Mozambique, Swaziland, Lesotho, and Namibia. And this will form the basis for scientific tools that we've established that will assist the regulatory committee to be able to regulate cross-border transport from a scientific basis. It will assist with decision making and also in terms of the split that we want to establish between the number of taxis and buses that apply in their trade in the region. Given the issues of comfort, we do not think it's fair or proper that people should transport it between South Africa and the country as far as Malawi on in taxi, for instance. We think that should be the exclusive domain of buses simply because there's more space in the bus and there's more comfort levels. And we think that is part of restoring the dignity of the African parent if we achieve those type of objectives. We also launched a Cross Alive Road Safety campaign. Chairperson, this is in support of the UN Decade of Ethical Road Safety. Road safety is not our primary mandate, it is the primary mandate of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. Given the challenges as a country and the challenges that we experience in terms of cross-border movement, where vehicles coming from some of our neighboring countries come here and actually kill people, we felt that we couldn't just sit back and say this is not our mandate. And we therefore launched the Cross Alive Road Safety campaign in order to be able to supplement the work that is being done by those entities who are primarily mandated to look after this area of work. We then went into partnerships with key strategic stakeholders who play a critical role in the cross-border environment. We cannot really do what we do without partnering with the Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Tourism, Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Home Affairs, Environmental Affairs, anything business of affairs revenue services, particularly their cattle division. We formalized relations with other domestic stakeholders because, again, we picked up that if we do not work closely with municipalities and provinces, then people can always exploit the gap between the cities that don't speak to each other. Someone can register within a province as an interprovincial transport operator and come to us and register as a cross-border operator. And if there's no symbiotic relationship between what the province does within at an interprovincial level and what we do at cross-border level, we will not know who is the WCT, and this then becomes a source of conflict which results in violence, especially in the taxi industry. Certainly, in terms of our performance in law enforcement, we have a very small law enforcement department. We by no means have the numbers we desire. We would want to have over 300 cross-border, as a minimum 300. We see currently with just over 200 cross-border inspectors, but notwithstanding that situation, we've been able to increase the annual inspection to the tune of 50%. When you compare from 2012-2013 to 2013-2014, you'll notice that there's a difference of 79,126 inspections. That's a 50% increase year-on-year movement. Prosecution is the same, Chairperson, has been increased to the tune of 91.2% when you look at the numbers we did of prosecutions in 2012-13 versus 2013-14. All of these, Chairperson, I need to share here, achieved without a single cent of support being received from National Treasury. Totally self-sufficient and totally self-funded. Compliance rate, this is where we have not registered improved. We've actually seen a drop of 8.77%, which means there's less operators from the cross-border territories that are complying with the requirements of the law and that are operating the prescription in terms of the fitness of the vehicle, safety. And that in itself translates into the accident that we then see on the road. And we think for us to be more effective in attending to these compliance issues, indeed we need to look into how do we bring up the CBRK and enable the CBRK to be more effective in terms of ensuring that this compliance rate also improves. In terms of police issues, Chairperson, we've increased from 75,000 to 80,000, which is an increase of 6.7%. And these things are issues in new categories. In the taxi industry, we've seen a 5.3% increase. In the passenger transport bus industry, you don't have the number there, Chairperson, but it's supposed to be 11.5% decrease. In the freight industry, you have 55%. That has grown to 63,935, which constitutes a 15.7%. increase. And then the tourist transport, we've seen a 31.5%. And that in itself tells you how much tourist movements are taking place within the region, which really speaks to Africa integrating and South Africa becoming more and more part of Africa in the true sense of the word. This one just gives you the specific splits from country to country. It's very important that as a community you understand who are we issuing these passenger transport licenses to. Majority of which will be for Mozambique, which constitutes 40%, is followed by Zimbabwe, which is 26%, then followed closely by Lesotho and 25%, and then the rest of the percentages are also there. But in what is also incredible, Chairperson, is that in the majority of cases, when you look at 2012-13 versus 2013-14, you'll also notice that it's generally increased, except in Lesotho, where we all know what challenges have been experienced in terms of the state Lesotho issue. And in the Swaziland corridor, there's also a drop, and in the Zambia corridor, there's also a drop. In terms of issues in the bus environment, again, the majority of buses are directed towards Zimbabwe, followed closely by Mozambique, then by Botswana and Lesotho. I mean by Lesotho and then Botswana. Also, Chairperson, you note here that there is actually generally a shift of people using less buses and moving using more taxis, which is actually counter to what we ideally want to see. Because given the long distances between South Africa and some of these neighboring countries, particularly countries like Malawi, ideally we would want to see less people using taxis and more people using buses. And that speaks to the incentives that we need to put in place to actually encourage the issuance of more licenses to buses than to taxis. But again, it's a balancing act, it's a fine balancing act, because once we have operators who are already flying on those corridors, we will not simply take away their rights to operate on those corridors, but we then need to really direct. And this is where the scientific tool we call market access regulation will assist us scientifically redirect, so that from a policy point of view, we will achieve the ideal state of affairs that we would want to achieve. In terms of permits for freight movement, Chairperson, this is the greatest number, they constitute the largest number of permits that we issue. The majority of those, Chairperson, as you notice, are to Zambia, 21, which is sitting at 21%, and that is because of the copper bears there, so on. So it's also very important to understand what are the quantities that have been moved and the tonnages that have been moved, because that gives us a sense of who are we trading with and who is the strategic partner that is a country who also needs to invest more in terms of strengthening our diplomatic relations with. This is followed, Chairperson, by Zimbabwe and Mozambique, both sitting at 17%, and then we have Botswana at 13%, Namibia at 10%, and Swaziland at 8%. Again, Chairperson, except for DRC Congo, where we've seen a drop of 32.7%, Lesotho again, where we've seen a drop of 3.7%, and Swaziland. Majority of countries, we've seen an increase. A couple of times, Chairperson, I need to say that that increase that you see has been engineered by us. Because sometimes when an operator from a foreign country comes and moves within another country from one point to another, it's not a practice we would want to encourage, and therefore we have actually picked up the prices of the licenses and we've made it unaffordable for most operators to do that. And it was designed to actually achieve this goal of seeing less cabotage movements taking place, because you would want to reserve to the extent possible the right to transport goods to operators of that particular country. So there's no point in South Africa allowing a foreign operator to come and move goods between Durban and Cape Town or Durban and Johannesburg when that opportunity should actually be given to a South African operator. In terms of tourism permits, we've seen an over 31.5% growth. Unfortunately, Chairperson, when it comes to tourism, we don't categorize it from country to country, so we do not have that detailed list of which country and how many of tourists are going from which country to which country. In terms of the strategic project, the first project we embarked upon when as part of this turnaround was really to say that we needed to define the strategic value proposition of the CDRCA. This was also informed by this need of saying CDRCA needed to prove itself. Remember, Chairperson, we come from 1998, where we were a dysfunctional organization from 1998, when we established, right up to 2009, and we had lost credibility, both at the level of this oversight committee and at the level of the Minister of Transport. We are then challenged to say, as part of your turnaround, come up with a new value proposition so that if we have to make a case for your funding, for your sustainability as an entity, you need to give us a story that makes sense. And this is where we started back in 2010 when we developed this strategic value proposition plan, which was laid around first doing a situational analysis which we've now completed, and environmental scanning, and stakeholder engagements to define what is it that we want to see an entity like the CDRCA do. And the integration of all strategic projects will then house also within this incentive. The future plan, Chairperson, in this regard is to present a plan to the Minister and the Department with defined roles and strategic propositions that the agency is embarking upon. We're also looking at a mandate revision of the CDRCA, where we identify areas where we can enhance more in terms of what is it that we monitor, monitoring of the tonnages that are of people that of goods that are removed, but also seeing having a role to play in terms of identifying opportunities. We also intend to support the DOT in drafting the legislation that will define the future CDRCA and the progressive implementation of the strategic value proposition plan. The second key project, Chairperson, which is really, really at the heart of how we want to do the work that we do, is what we call operator compliance accreditation scheme. This is simply a risk-based profiling mechanism, Chairperson, where you say,
How do you determine whether a particular operator plays by the rules of the game and who doesn't play by the rules of the game? What incentives do you give to those who are playing by the rules of the game so that you create incentives for operators to voluntarily want to comply and then you have less of non-compliant operators by being able to effectively use a system like this? This chairperson is not the brainchild of ours. It's something that we've copied from other countries, but we've customized it for South African environment. It is already used in many of the developed countries. If you go to the U.S., between U.S. and Canada, they're using a similar system. When you U.S. and Mexico, the same. And when you go to some of the Scandinavian countries, they're already using systems like this. And even a country like Australia is using a system like this. But we've taken all the key elements from those different systems and we've customized them for South Africa. And really the purpose of this chairperson is to upgrade these cross-border operators based on their risk profiles, so that you do not pay too much attention to your generally compliant operator, but you identify your problem child cases and you crush your energies there, given the lack of resources that you have as an entity. The key in terms of the future plan is we are in a stage of strategic stakeholder engagement, particularly at the strategic level, where we are engaging with our counterparts, but also the minister is directed that we broaden the benchmarking that we've done to say, let's also look at the BRICS countries. Let's look at what is happening in the BRICS countries so that this model actually has a benefit of having taken as wide a view of what is happening out there in the rest of the world, so that what we can then customize for the African environment has the benefit of lessons of every other part of the world. So we are actually busy with an exercise now where we are looking at some of the BRICS countries which were not originally part of the countries we looked at when we designed this model. Market access regulation is another one. So I think I've already spoken to this one, where really the intention is to have a scientific tool for determination of the supply and demand within the cross-border corridor, particularly with respect to passenger movement. And the idea here is so that from a policy point of view, we can also introduce the shift and start influencing who you give license to, so that you begin to influence who is how are goods transported, for instance, on a country where the rail line is 1,000 kilometers or less than 1,000 and so on, so that from a policy point of view, you also provide and take data for issue of safety and comfort of the passengers who are being transported on this corridor. Business case for corridor and cross-border management. The purpose of the fund is to define the role of the CBRCA in border management and corridor management reforms generally, and to say how do we link up with other players. You know that in the border environment, we are not the only player, we are 1 of 7 key players in the border environment. And this is part of the challenge we are creating, because none of the 7 players has actually the overriding authority over what happens in the border environment. But this exercise is aimed at really defining a role of the CBRCA within this, but also how do you then influence other players within that space. The industry partnership development one is really about building strong partnerships, strategic relations, and partners within the cross-border environment, and driving initiatives on the development of SMEs and empowerment of historically disadvantaged individuals, and getting more and more black players into this space as operators. Chairperson, some of the strategic partnerships we've established. At the regional level, we have a very solid and sound partnership with the SADC Secretariat. We have joint committees with all the countries with which we trade. So joint committee will be a committee where ourselves and our counterparts, whether it's Zambia, whether it's Zimbabwe, whether it's Botswana, and we meet twice a year in each of. So one meeting will be in the other country, one meeting will be in South Africa. On the routes themselves, we have what we call joint route management groups, which also look and identify challenges that are experienced on the various routes, and we are jointly find solutions to those. At the national level, we participate in the Border Control Operational Coordination Committee in the Inter-Agency Steering Forum. We have engagements with the Department of Home Affairs on a structured basis, the South African Revenue Services, National Intelligence Coordination Commission, and the National Joint Operational and Intelligence Structure. We also have engagements with provincial embassies, and we've really gone through a massive type of meeting with other embassies, also with a view to actually establishing a closer relationship between inter-provincial regulation of passenger transport movement and cross-border movement, so that we avoid double dipping and we avoid operators who then find themselves flying their shade on both levels. At local level, with metros and municipalities, we also try to strengthen those relationships, especially with respect to issues of international ranking facilities. Because for cross-border movement and for people to be transported from different facilities, municipalities have the responsibility of providing those international ranking facilities. And unfortunately, it's not every municipality where we have different international ranking facilities. sometimes cross-border movement and inter-provincial movement are all located with one, and that also leads to conflict and unnecessary struggles there. At an internal level, we have route committees, we have a cross-border operators forum. We also have a stakeholder forum where we meet with all the other government departments that have a role to play in the cross-border environment. And this is where we iron out problems, we identify common issues, and we try and assist one another in a spirit of cooperating. And we also have SME development initiatives where we work with the likes of the DTI to help us to support your emerging and new entrants into this environment. This slide just highlights some of the development and empowerment programs that we've embarked on. The development of women in transport program aimed at introducing women operators to the cross-border road transport. And these are women who would have come to apply for cross-border licenses, but who would not have met the criteria for one reason or another. We then develop programs around them where we assist and support them in terms of knowing what are the things that they need to comply with in order to be able to be eligible to receive such things. Ongoing SME development program for aspiring cross-border operators in general, and the training of inspectors on the Act, the Administrative Adjudication of the Road Traffic Offences Act, and the Professional Conduct and Law Enforcement, which is then about enhancing and strengthening the internal capacity of our own inspectors so that they have the confidence to appear in court, and when they do appear in court, they are able to speak from a position of authority and competence on the offences that would have found an operator to be in violation of. We have a significant number of our senior management who have been taken and successfully completed the senior management development program, and all of this aimed at the strengthening of the internal capacity, because without having a strong internal capacity within the organization, all the objectives we have at a strategic level will not translate into practical doable at organizational level. In terms of facilitation, this is our agenda that's equity specific. The majority of the employees are African, 84%, 5% are colored, 3% are Indian, 8% are white. Then from a gender point of view, 52% of our employees are female, 38% are male, and at senior management level, I'm proud to say, we also have a 50-50% split. Financial overview. Chapter what we're showing here is really terms revenue and the expenses, and we're comparing the two financial years, 2012-13, 2013-14. And it's also giving you a sense of the split of where our income is coming from. 69% of the income, as you've noticed, comes from the permit income. And for me, this is a challenge, Chairperson. And let me just pause and speak to this. If part of our mandate is to reduce the cost of doing business for cross-border operators, we cannot at the same time depend on them and the permit fees for our own survival. It's almost like having a perverted incentive. On one hand, you want to make these people be able to fly their businesses, to be able to trade, and to make the conditions simpler for them. At the same time, you are dependent on them for your own upkeep. It's almost a contradiction in terms. And our view, Chairperson, is that we don't want to take more money from the operators. We want to try and reduce the cost of doing business for operators, to enhance operational viability of operators to the extent possible. But there are other avenues where we can actually get this, because again, we are very mindful of the fact that even from government doesn't really have the capacity to actually spend more. But there are other avenues that can be exploited in terms of how best do we actually balance the cost of traversing through our corridors. Let me give an example. Most of the countries that we interact with, when you get to Zimbabwe, for instance, there's a road user charge that you pay. Just for using the roads of Zimbabwe, you pay a fee. Because they're saying you come here and you contribute to the damage of their road. When Zimbabweans come to South Africa, they don't pay a road user charge. And that immediately creates an imbalance. It means the South African operator who's lying their trade in Zimbabwe has additional costs, because they must pay for a road user charge in Zimbabwe. Yet a Zimbabwean counterpart is coming to South Africa, doesn't pay for a road user charge. And this is where we think we need to balance the scale as a country. And we think that additional revenue that will be generated from that can go a long way towards alleviating the plight of our operators and ensuring that we do not have this perverse mandate where our survival depends on charging the operators, the very people whose business we are trying to promote and support. And we think really at a strategic level, these are some of the topics we really need to engage on and to with you to really change the dynamics around this environment. And it's part of what we consider to be the mandate of the CRK in terms of what do we do, how do we do what we do, in a manner that is consistent with the objectives for which we established. Chairperson, if I move on to the next slide on financial position of the agency, Again, we're giving you that our assets and our liabilities, and again, you see that starting with our receivables from 2012, 2013, 2014, the split, the cash and cash equivalents that we have there, our non-current assets, and the total assets versus total liabilities. Some of these questions, if there are further questions, I will also request the CFO to support me in terms of this, this area of work. Another area where we are very proud, Chairperson, and this one really, I really would watch the committee to also. I'm not saying the person who has zero fault in terms of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, but if you look at this, Chairperson, you'll notice that we had 14 million irregular expenditure in 2011-12. We've dropped that to 910,000. Yes, indeed, the question becomes, why do you still have that 910,000? And what does it constitute? And it has dropped further to 827,000. And in the main, the person is related to the telecom on over two accounts. It relates to offices, our seven provincial offices that are rented on a month-to-month contract, which is not in compliance with the supply chain regulation. So that's really how that's the regular expenditure that we derive from. On a ruthless and wasteful expenditure point of view, it dropped from 456,000 to 11,000 in the last financial year and to only 2,224 in the financial year that has just ended. I think it speaks to the commitment and the fact that we are really driving this area, because indeed these are the things that make public sector entities look like clowns, and we look like one of the rest about looking after public resources. On the outcome, Chairperson, I'm going to ask the CFO to really take us through this, Mr. Pemis.
Honourable Chair and members of the committee, our voice outcome is unqualified for the opinion in matters of emphasis. Let me just indicate that in terms of the financials that we submitted to the administration committee, the AG, they were not amended at all, so there were no amendments to the financials. So they were perfectly as they were, the old test, there were no subsequent amendments coming from the old process. In terms of matters of emphasis, the issue there really was the going concern issue of the student pay emanating from litigation. Members will be aware that whether it's largely that we have a pending litigation where the operators made that they have taken us to court in relation to the increase of the payment in April of 2011. That made a pending. The AG here simply wants to alert the use of financial statements to say that there is a concern around the pricing of the operation, because if we are to lose the hate to advance the industry, then should that be the issue of going concern on the arise. The other issues that the AG has indicated, of course, the challenge that we have had also for the number of years, the issues around the usefulness of the information. We have issues with the smartness of our indicators. In some of these papers, we thought that they would have gotten right, but there were challenges from the company that was in support where, in relation to strategic projects, we have a number of indicators that we get with the way that we also understand the way we do it. We put measures to make sure that we want those issues that are right, where they could not place clients on some of the information that we provided to them. For example, the issue here in terms of network support, it was to say how we measure ourselves. We have a project plan, and our deliverable target is a project plan. But if we believe that the project plan that we have finished is in this project, we want to for the end of the year. And of course, the third point that we're taking is that we want to make sure that we go on. The project plan will then have to be approved so that they inform and the deliverables in the strategic plan. The other area where we have challenges with the audit is around the law enforcement area, where our what we informed mainly by the monitoring tools, but the monitoring tools then align to the source documentation that is now the radio equipment for notices and all of that. But where the challenge was the detailed report that indicates which is by notice to enable the AG to take a sample, and that was not there. What we have done subsequent to that, we make sure that in terms of the infrastructure system that we use for law enforcement, there is a model that is actually the evidence of all those displays vector. We also have in the past the manual process that is not going very well, but we are confident that we have resolved it and we are moving forward. The next area, I think, is the area that we were talking about around the content. It was the issue of content management, but obviously,
and we used to participate in the expenditure because much, much of them are not allowed. What we had in this area as well, subsequent to this, we had about 7 contracts that were on a month-to-month basis. The terms in there is that they are both related 2 years before Arabic, they have been had. So that was a very important area. And what we've been able to do, part of the last financial year, as well as the current year, we've been trying to take those contracts and change more contracts. And as we saw now, all of them are gone, except the only one that is still remaining in final position. So that's the extent of the contract condition. So I think this is basically the issues I've been from body. In summary, we have sent this around with more information. As I see that we also have a unit in terms of this program that we have set up. That unit, as I think in the last meeting, it's really new unit. We have completed it, and we are really supporting that to make sure that issues are dealt with. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. So, Captain, looking into the future, just quick to give you a sense of what we feel our key imperatives going forward. Really, Captain, firstly, we need to say this, that the success and sustainability of this engine is dependent on the continued guidance and support of an oversight committee like yours. We really want to place reliance on yourself, Captain, to guide and support us as we embark into the future in terms of achieving the introduction of the operator compliant accreditation scheme within South Africa and within the SADC region, the implementation of an operator value-oriented strategy, which must entail how do we reduce the burden on the operator, how do we shift the burden of the cost of funding the cross-border operations away from the operator and finding alternatives which we did attain. The need for protection of the South African domestic operators in regard to conditions obtained in our neighboring countries. We also think that the time has come to review our bilateral agreements and to implement the SADC protocol in a more decisive way. We need to harmonize regulatory systems between the CBRTS and OLAF, thus ensuring that intra-provincial regulation of passenger transport movements and cross-border movements are integrated and they are mutually supported. We really need to pay more attention on the issue of the funding model, Chairperson. It is evident that the current model is not sustainable and will remain fragile because our funding mechanism contradicts the very basis of existence from a strategic point of view. We need to develop the capacity and competence for addressing the question of unroadworthy cross-border vehicles as well, Jefferson. Yes, in 1994, we entered into agreements where we recognized vehicles that by our standards would ordinarily not be seen as fit and proper to be on our roads. But when you look at the impact of those vehicles, when they contribute to the number of people who get killed on our roads on a day-to-day basis, Jefferson, I think it's time we have reflected on these questions of threat. Not with a view to be done in hostile to our neighboring countries, but with a view to the South Africa first, I think. We need to strengthen the partnerships with the South African Revenue Services and other border authorities. And we need to really start appreciating the changing dynamics in border towns. You have noticed that border towns increasingly are becoming major hubs in their own right from a shopping point of view, where people from our neighboring country come to the border towns to do shopping, but the capacity and the infrastructure in those border towns was never designed to handle the massive numbers of people. Musina, for instance, is a case in point. Komati Port is another case in point. Nelfrate even. And the capacity from an infrastructure point of view is not really able to handle these massive volumes of people who come to South Africa shopping and so on. And these are questions that really need to be looked at. From a profiling point of view, Chairperson, we need to provide more intelligence to support cross-border industry. And this issue of intelligence, Chairperson, there is a small compliance issue because when you look into our National Intelligence Act, only the South African Security Services can gather intelligence. But from cross-border point of view, we will never be effective if we do not have the capacity to gather intelligence. Because otherwise, we will not know what is happening. There's too many wrong things happening on our borders. Our borders are porous and so on. And if we don't have the capacity to gather intelligence, a lot of things can happen in the wrong way. And therefore, there's also another area that needs to be resolved from a regulatory compliance point of view. Chairperson, we are trying to add a clean audit opinion. We view this as the ultimate. We are aware that we are not there yet, but given where we're coming from, Chairperson, we didn't have walls, we built the walls, we plastered the walls, we now need to paint the walls. That will be the clean house for us. I think it's just a second.
Yeah. thank you very much. The world anything from my left? Yeah.
big organization, and even like Facebook and Google fans, in college business, you know, I've seen some of the students speak to it in the college stage. But those students in the case, that's not to be able to some students, and I should just explain it to them. And also the next KPI is number 5, potential employees who completed clinical resource management development program. And then you said you couldn't do it because you're just employed based. So my question is, surely these things were planned in advance, most of them were in advance. What happened to suddenly realize you couldn't afford it, you're quite good. And then also the next one to come is a little strange, is that you couldn't produce new sectors. And I think things like new sectors so far can be very useful. First question is, you couldn't find a service provider. I can make two phone calls. I can find a service provider. One is a straight away, so you still have problems. The second thing is that new sectors doesn't have to be a piece of paper to be able to provide in other ways. So perhaps you just can paint as wide as a picture of my bags on a building.
About that, and maybe you can tell us
and say, why is it that we are good? Because we have been to our country for one years. Including the issues about what the organization said, it's very much about the one person on the table and not being a professor. Not seeing that I am a favor, but the culture of actions that are not actions. Which is there just to say we will do something, but never. What are the constraints that make it impossible for them to be implemented? Is probably what I forgot, and it's for IT solutions. For the things that we do, what I think we would appreciate is that the liability of the information is critical. That's what the business was. And he's worried about the number of people. All the issues also do with the in-house capacity, skills, workforce. He's worried about the issues about pressure, IT system control, which is also being developed in reappearing sort of new stuff. And then the process to identify. And then the other one relates to the issue about procedures and questions. Now, these are the things that perhaps we should speak a little bit to and give some kind of assurance about what is going to be done so that next time around another important, this does not reappear. I want to ask the issue about the people's health objectives. Maybe I have grasped the fact that 50% of are not achieved. And not only that, we have also the other problem of the liability aspect of targets. What is it? I mean, you could do something about if this objective measure can tell you the report tangibly on it, can you be reliable because of each action? If you say you're going to give a surely, if you would objective on that so that the scenario is measured, they would see whether the family was in the issue or not. So, I don't understand the struggle with defining this so that they are able to be, when they are deposited, they can be relied on kind of information. So, you could indicate is it a skin issue? Capacity kind of issues that people that are there also issue about interchangeability of these concepts. So I don't know what it means, but maybe you should explain so that we understand. Now, I do think that in explaining it, you take note that we have a PTS report, the detail of what they ask. So we ask you because it's part of the report that is related to it. I know that sometimes the CEO or the director of the language use what the AG says when they appear for a community, they say, no, they didn't understand, but that's why they wrote it this way. So when they pass that stage, we just want to hear. If we have the next conversation with you, would you be able to say these 9 issues that the age is worried about? In terms of the 10 around there that we put together, we will put the heads on the block for you to the topic to start about. So that's what we want to hear from you. I will leave the address because I think this is the issue of the legislature. And this is the issue of the waste of the chat. In case they are not. I think I accept that we will be quite upfront so that I don't know what is going forward. What is the kind of event, possibly for the point of share or the implications of the financial to the organization? There should be a thinking and a plan that is one thing at a time that is put together. Thank you. Thank you. So are they able to make one lecture in terms of the which is the
I know that I'm not going to be able to do that.
food, you know, for the God, and how you can refer it more on relationships and what, but how do you also ask in terms of that, and also in terms of the other countries, how do we do that? The third one is a responsibility, which is a problem for us. I know for this country, friends of everybody's views, and I'm saying what you want to do, but also my daughter's education, which is not the self of everyone, that we able to improve especially in the village. The other one is the relationship between yourselves and the women, because this is fact, I know in the book about 70 facts that in every day between Ghana or something in our country. So that's the one that I want. So what is the relationship between you and the women who are living with the other issue? The other issue is the relationship with the men. Because most of the men, you can see people like a society. They are not allowed to be there that much. So because you see that our American starts money to go with
and focus on some of the questions that are non-audit or non-financial, and then I will ask the CFO to assist me on some of the other issues. The issues of, for instance, general expenditure, what we mean by that huge chunk and leave to the CFO, the drop in income, really, one, if I may just explain it, has to do with the number of chemicals that people apply for. When our tariffs increased, there was naturally a drop in the number of operators who came to apply for cross-border permits. And at some point when we were in that test, and then the court forced us to go back to the old permits, then again we saw the number of applicants jumping up again. But for me, this really raises another issue at a more strategic level. It suggests to me that it is possible for an operator to operate without a cross-border permit. Because if you can afford not to, if the permit is raised to a particular level, then it means then the people say the risk is worth the risk to try and operate without the cross-border permit, which also speaks to lack of controls at our border posts. But it really just explains that issue in the function of permit. In terms of issues raised by honorable traders around employees change linked to PDPs, yes indeed we have exceeded our target there. And you are quite correct to say that inspector change should have received more and higher priority. But this was targeted inspector training in terms of the actual inspector training to
three those people as vehicle experts in terms of being able to determine the road maintenance of the vehicles. Part of the challenge there to do with the availability of that quality of training that we require. And indeed, we have that performs there, and part of what we are doing going forward is to actually try and establish partnerships with the country like Sweden, which really has this as a specialized area of expertise for themselves, and the intention is to send some of our inspectors into Sweden to train as vehicle inspectors. It's really lack of, there's no specialized institution in South Africa that provides that specialized training. And the idea is to say that our inspectors, or a certain number of our inspectors, should really be developed as experts in terms of vehicle inspections, and to be able to immediately say that this vehicle may not be able to proceed because it lacks, it's got these fundamental defects which make it a serious risk to allow that vehicle to proceed. So indeed, that is a correct observation. Accelerated Management Development Program, I'm not sure what the question was, and I'm going to beg for the indulgence of this. Honorable Secretary, in this respect, I tried to cater the question, but and indeed the challenge around our inability to produce new letters, it's an unforgivable one. I'd be the first one to admit, it's really a serious flaw in terms of that area of performance within the organization. Our communications department has really let us down, and I mean there's no point in me coming here and trying to create reasons that are not founded. It's really the failure of leadership in that department, and this is how this situation has resulted. There's no other reason than to choose why we are failed to produce four newsletters that we are targeted to produce. And these issues have been dealt with at a different level within the organization. The issue of the cross-border amendment regulations, the absence of experts in assisting in this regard, it's not a whole story. Part of what has happened here was the inability for us to get this to be signed on a board level in time. And that was really part of the reason why there was non-performance there. So as an organization, we made ourselves to have those amendment regulations ready so that they could sign off by board in time. So I really don't want to come and create stories. I'd rather we deal with issues in a frank and open manner. And where we fail, we really need to be frank about it and say so. The issue of expenditure classified, there is no intention to hide anything from the creator. And I'll ask the CFO to really clarify that issue. But just to allay your fears, there is no attempt to conceal or to hide anything. Unfortunately, Honorable Ramatakane has left the room, but there is a very important question around some of these seven non-compliance issues that the Auditor General has raised. I will respond to Chairperson and assume that this feedback will reach Honorable Ramatakane. It is compliance with the law is one of the issues that was raised. And this one pertains to issues of our irregular expenditure, and I'm asked the CFO to really delve in terms of some of these other areas. But the one I would want to attend to is the IT governance issue. IT governance issue has to do with us having failed to put in place the IT governance system that is prescribed by the Department of Public Administration, the Public Service Administration. We are working on this. We are establishing a CIO office in the organization and it really aims at addressing this issue of IT governance. And it will also assist us in terms of the reliability of the information that we produce. So it's an area that is noted and it's an area that we're already addressing. As an organization, we've also restructured the organization. We didn't have a CIO office, Chief Information Officer. As part of our restructuring, we've established this as we've advertised with a notice maybe in the press that there was an access to this effect, and that will really help us to enhance that area. The other issue is really around our system control, and this has to do with CRTS, the cross-border road transport system. It is a very old system, especially so old that it is DOS-based. But it's a function of the resource constraints in the organization that when we actually sought out to actually establish a new system, the cost of doing that was just so prohibitive given the limited resource base that we're operating with. And we've been trying to plug the system, trying to improve here and there. Sometimes when something has outlived its useful life, it becomes very difficult to improve on it. So we are now setting out to say that even if we just do a few modules that would not cover the entire enterprise resource learning point of view, but just to address some of the critical functions. And we really are prioritizing the project. And at the very last expo, we actually discussed what are we doing to actually make sure that we don't exit with a similar situation come the end of the financial year when the auditor come and reflect on this. This determinant of debt is just to say that it's not true that 50% were not achieved. Only 50% were not achieved. But the Solicitor General made an observation of saying, even among those that were achieved within the strategic support area, 50% you could not place reliability on. And this pertains to the issue of the project plans, the project plans not having been signed off at the beginning when the project was actually being designed. And therefore, the Auditor General saying it becomes very difficult to measure whether indeed reliability can be placed on whether what has been done is consistent with what was agreed to upfront, so that you determine whether what was predetermined and the output were actually consistent and speaking to each other. And indeed, there is a problem of skills in terms of project management, and it's an error we've identified, and it's an error we are responding to as well. The going concern issue, Chairperson, this one is the most fundamental of all challenges facing us, I would say. We are at the constitutional court stage now. We've lost the case, we appealed, and if indeed we are saying lose the case at this point, then it really means doomsday. That means we'll owe operators 340 million rand, which we simply don't have. And indeed, that will, for me, will spell disaster, because it will wipe out everything we have, and it would mean that as an organization we have liabilities that will far exceed any revenue potential we have. And it's an issue that I would therefore request for the committee to also assist us in taking it forward in terms of saying, what do we do? What is plan B or plan C in this regard? What do we do if indeed this eventuality that we lose the case at the constitutional court arises? Where to from there? The issue of compliance dropping as performance is increasing. In fact, it's an interesting observation, and indeed it seems to be that a strange arrangement there. And it's really not by design that as performance is improving, compliance is dropping. Maybe it's just a question of saying, this thing pay attention here and then things sit there and so on. But it's really not something that we've designed it to be that way. And the Dubai Exchange, we are raising a very, very critical issue, but this is an issue at a higher policy level. Because in South Africa, we do not allow buying vehicles. And for the simple reason that they do not meet with our homologation standards. There's a particular standard that a vehicle must meet to be allowed to operate within South Africa. But as a country, we are signatories to international agreements with our neighboring countries. And part of that, in our financial agreements, we said, where a vehicle is considered to be roadway in Mozambique, that vehicle will be authorized to operate within South Africa. I don't know if you hear what I'm saying. If a vehicle is considered to be roadworthy in Mozambique, that vehicle will be considered and will be allowed to operate within South Africa. Even if by South African standards, ordinarily that vehicle would not have been allowed to operate. And that's why you can't buy a Dubai and operate within South Africa. But a Mozambican can buy a Dubai and bring it to South Africa because of the financial agreement we have in Mozambique. And this is where we say, you have noticed that part of what I was saying in the presentation is to say, we need to revisit some of these financial agreements. Because when it comes to the number of deaths that we experience on our road, and particularly the contribution of cross-border vehicles, you will realize that they are contributing a significant portion. And therefore, undermining the work of your RTMC, of your RTIA, and all those other traffic authorities that are trying to improve the road safety situation. But it's a gap, it's a loophole in the financial agreements, because the financial agreements are there as part of trying to integrate South Africa with the rest of the African continent. The standard that if a vehicle meets the standard of a foreign country, that vehicle will automatically be allowed to operate within South Africa. And we're saying we need to revisit those bilateral agreements because they are compromising us at another level and they are actually undermining our efforts at another level. So it's almost like the left hand is undoing what the right hand is trying to do, if you know what I mean. And it is an issue that needs, it's an issue at the strategic level, and it's an issue that needs to be given attention at that level. And indeed, issues of these cheap imports and these vehicles are cheap imports. So these are vehicles that are being dumped by some of your eastern countries like Japan, for instance. They have very, very high standards in terms of even vehicle emissions. When year on year a vehicle is considered, the emissions increase by a certain percentage. When they reach their thresholds, and their thresholds are very low, those vehicles can no longer be allowed to operate in a country like Japan. And then they bring them here, and they dump here and here in South Africa and that's good. Then the rest of the African continent comes and buys the vehicles from South Africa, plus we serve as the warehouse for these vehicles in May because of the seven ports which serve these vehicles. And then those vehicles are taken and purchased and are sold to our neighboring countries, but then they come and operate within South Africa. So it's a huge challenge and it's an issue that really needs to be looked at. Honorable Ndawudi also raised the issue of self-funding. And you're correct to say that we are worried about this area. We are worried about this area from a strategic point of view, from the point of view of saying if our purpose as an agent is to reduce the operational constraints and the cost of doing business, our role is to assist in making sure that the cost of doing business, particularly transport costs, are reduced. This is our primary reason for existence. Yet our funding depends on us levying a fee for the licensing of operators. There's a contradiction inherent in the makeup of these agents. And we are saying that, yes, government cannot fund us. We understand that government, the corpus of government that tends to the limit as we speak. And indeed, we cannot continue to place reliance on the operators because it also creates this adversarial relationship between us and the very people we're supposed to be assisting. But we're saying that if as a country we look at what our neighboring countries are doing, there are many other possibilities that are available that we need to exploit and explore as a country to see how best we leverage and establish another funding or resource basis from which the CRC's effort can be funded. That is this indeed government, from a strategic point of view, consider this entity to be an entity of strategic significance and of value to itself. The alternative, of course, is to say that to do away and reduce the cost of doing business, maybe this CDRA must be done away with, which is also from a strategic an option that government must consider. But once a determination is made one way or another, we must then remove these inherent contradictions that are actually making us undermine the very thing that we're supposed to be fending for. It's a strategic question again that must be looked at from that point of view. In terms of the IA partners, indeed we do have alliances with Santaco and all the bus operators, or we actually have cross-border operator forums, and all the players who are holders of cross-border licenses and permits are actually participating in those meetings which are held on a quarterly basis. We have one for the taxi, we have one for the bus, we have one for the freight industry. And the National Road Traffic Act is actually a very fundamental part of what we do. The reason why we're looking at new acts like Road Traffic Infringement Act is because historically our inspectors were not trained in that act. It's a recent act, as you know, and we're able to say that as we roll out ARTO, we want cross-border operators to understand their role within that. It's not in the absence, or it's not a substitute for the National Road Traffic Act. The Road Traffic Act has always been part of the curriculum of what our cross-border inspectors are changed to be able to look after. You mentioned something about youth, the empowerment initiatives about HR specific. In fact, it's an area that we're paying specific focus on. And in fact, 48% of our employees at cross-border fall within the threshold of what we call youth. And we're really trying very hard to drive that. Both of them, in terms of the inspector, we have an inspector training program where we take a number of inspectors as trainees, and then once they have been trained for a year and they've been given apprenticeship, they then get absorbed into our structure as employees. But we are operating from a very limited and a very small funding base, which then constrains the extent to which we are able to roll out these initiatives on a larger scale. The issue of intelligence, just to clarify, the relationship we have with NetJoint and other structures of intelligence, indeed it's there, but it's where we rely on the intelligence coming from those other entities. The issue that I was raising was say, the nature of our work as an entity requires us to profile operators to know who is bringing contraband in South Africa, who is transporting illegal stuff in South Africa, and that is an intelligence operation. It requires you to be able to have a capacity to actually go there and to do surveillance and so on. And I'm saying in terms of the National Intelligence Act in South Africa, no other authority except the South African Security Services can gather intelligence. And therefore there's an inherent limitation in terms of what we would ideally want to do and what the law provides for. It's an area of regulation, of how we regulate this area of work. Because to protect ourselves, nobody can just go about gathering intelligence for everybody else. So as a country, we've actually limited that right to one entity so that government can then put control over and and oversight mechanism to ensure that the body that actually acquires intelligence, that intelligence is used correctly. And that is just what I was flagging in my report. The issue to the state matter, I thought we had really elaborated on this at length at the previous meeting. It remains a challenge. It's not a challenge that cross-border can solve alone. The minister has gone so far as to actually sponsor a tech demo to this effect. But the minister has instructed that before we actually take this matter to cabinet, let's meet with all the other MECs in every other province so that we develop what the minister has called a consensus view on how we want to approach this issue. And in this issue will eventually be resolved only at cabinet level. Cross-border can only do so much because cross-border has no authority to tell a province how to conduct itself within the domain of that province. So it's not true that we are the cause of the problem, but we are limited in terms of what we can do in assisting in the resolution of that problem. And we are doing our best to try and intervene everywhere possible with a view to actually really addressing this as a strategic challenge facing us. The issue of overloaded vehicles is a very important issue, and you've spotted it quite correct. And there's two separate things here. The one of 9 tons to 10 ton trailers that are used by buses. It's currently in fact in terms of our law legitimate. So those buses, you can pull a 10-ton trailer, that in terms of our law is legitimate and correct. It's an issue that in terms of changing the law, what we're saying, because it does create a problem. An operator, a freight operator who's using a 10-truck, right, is actually disadvantaged by the bus that is able to pull a trailer of that same magnitude and size. Because we end up having people having bays and fridges and so on, which in my view cannot be considered to be personal effects. And that is a role that SARS, from a customs point of view, say, what is a personal effect? In my view, a personal effect is the thing that you have in your bag, whether it's your toiletry, your clothes and so on, or even a laptop or a cell phone and so on. But if we start calling fridges and bays personal effects, then I think we've overstretched that definition. But cross-border cannot, because this area is regulated, but customs is not regulated by cross-border. The way your argument is correct with respect to this highly heat buses, where you see a bucket that carries the weight that is 3 times the length, the height of that bucket. And again, they were limited by the law in terms of we only regulate from 3.5 tons upward. So a bucket that is less than 3.5 tons is outside of our jurisdiction as cross-border. And it's one of those areas we've identified of saying we really need to relook the way this agency was set so that we have this comprehensive coverage and we can attend to those areas. Honorable Lucieno is also in the room chair, but she raised issues around South African operators suffering. Indeed, it's a very correct observation, and we really need to balance the state so that South African operators have a fair chance of being able to compete effectively. Cross-border people crossing on seas, again, that one is an area that is strictly speaking outside of our jurisdiction. We only regulate commercial movements of people and goods. Passengers or residents crossing the board on foot, strictly speaking, not within the ambit of what the cross-border was established to look after. But as part of the partnerships we have, both with the Home Affairs and DCOCT and so on, we look at all these problems holistically and we don't just confine ourselves to what we need in our ambit, because those are some of the challenges that bring about problems in the corridor. The issue of cross-border rail is a very strategic issue that government needs to reflect on in a straight way, and I'm quite happy that it's being raised by this committee, because in my view, it's another avenue that has been neglected historically, and it's another area where I think we need to respond to in a meaningful way. Way bridges, the role of the RTA in this regard, way bridges are actually property of SANRAL, and mostly the SANRAL would give these to provincial authorities to actually manage them on behalf of SANRAL. We've identified a role for ourselves because those way bridges can assist us a lot, first as checking points, so that we don't have checking points at different, and secondly, we will also be able to participate with the engagements between CBRK and SANRAL around a role we've identified for ourselves in the management of way bridges. But part of that will also help us to address our own challenges. So, these are the key issues that I thought I would reflect to, but I would like to request the CFO to address some of the financial and some audit issues with your permission.
We've got a whole lot of general expenses. Expenses that we indicate, we see that we are spending on
on Saturday afternoon, on Sunday afternoon, on Thursday afternoon, on Tuesday afternoon, and those are all organized into this, but then we'll criticize to Christine and they go and say that the service. There was also a question on the athletic program program, but it was not master for. And he was master for, but whatever, with the international border, I mean, with the end, we had to withdraw our budget to make sure that we look at them as well, we should not spend any more costs on our group. Also, I see the fact that from August 2013, we had to refer back to the whole payment. Now, the budget was presented on the April 2011 payment, but in the work here, I mean, in mid-year, we had to refer back to the 2003 payment, and therefore, that affected the budget for the people who want to spend. The issues around the newsletters, the address policy, some of these are really more of internal challenges that we have, but also we have a that we use in terms of appointment of supervisors. And this is like the case of a newsletter supervisor was appointed, but we were not performing, therefore we had to start the process. So those are some of the challenges that we had. In terms of the supervisor to extend the time, the certification, what the member referred to is an accounting policy close to the treatment, and that's where the treatment. In terms of the accounting policy, we cannot disclose in the face of the financial service regular. All of that things that if the extended time is cared, for example, in Ketan, then those of the Ketanis that will be known in the financial, as the case of the financial, that particular do then reflect a regular expenditure. So it's not really having that also accounting policy in terms of the treatment to say that in the face of the financial, it will reflect under whatever expenditure, the initial expenditure that is in terms of publication, but will then eventually know in the financial structures to that. So then also just indicating issue of compliance. The compliance is that we have. If we start this month, the volunteer issues here, in the main case, to regular expenditure. And I must indicate that in terms of the expenditure, that was a transaction on behalf of the year at the Rajuna or when did not comply. All of them comply. The other expenditure we had, late contrary to the expenditure we had this year. So if not those transactions or contracts that we had from the previous year, we'd be sitting here today not taking any other expenditure. But that was a transaction that we contracted for the person that was there. We're going to be complying. So that's also in terms of the issues of the audits that were raised, in terms of recent plans, recording procedures and policies that we were said they relate to human information, they relate to permanent information IT issues. As also indicated, we have also moved in terms of IT in terms of getting the policies approved. Those policies were approved in terms of user access and data recovery issues. The accident also we have a metric that we review on a quarterly basis. On a quarterly basis, when we go to the committee, we also present that as a committee use that to basically check the progress in terms of how far we are. So I think maybe let me stop here. It's okay. The other thing was also in terms of progress management, in terms of how you keep your. The performance, the evidence, and all of that. That's why we had the issue with the mission commission.
Thank you very much. All of our more questions, I think we have to share with you. I'm not going to share, but I need to indicate to say that for sure, we should be able to guide the ministry and also guide us as the legislative process, the type of policies that we should be able to start looking into, particularly focusing on the question of protection of capital from the public. The fact that we also look into, I think it will also assist government to start looking into, it's not only the work where we pay for digitalization of the roads, Zambia and other countries that we are taking, farming, gas emissions, we pay for that. There are so many ways. How can we assist in terms of revenue generation? But we need to really strengthen our hands and our arms in terms of our long-term revenue. The divide that we are talking about is the graduate that in Turkey and Mozambique and Zimbabwe, they come in a big share by South Africa. We really need to bring into that and say, this we are not allowing, and therefore, the kind of initiate and how to do that. But I think that is kind of what members are indicating, that kind of piece of history. How do we make sure that this is kind of a safety culture and itself? You are able to share the resources that they are having so that we are able to build and help so with the advantage things that come to the public. Because the best is that we are raising here, we are not authorized, but how do we work with our system and what is achieving the IQ. I also want to ask you for the sentiment that is for the looks like you had the right one to fix machines so continuously more so that you can be able to do the job. But it doesn't mean that you will not watch and not jealous of what the agents have said and what you need to be able to do to perform better and which has what you should be better ready. But I think what I would like to say is taking a look at and moving forward. And these are things that we are making to be able to impress upon the board to say this is a strategic issue, work as we work with Japan. And we definitely, in terms of the challenges of the issue and what is we will also have a community how we can fix on a number of plans, but if it's other countries, for example, here, we will see as to how we can be a community in terms of what we want and working towards and making sure that we're able to find some of the challenges that we are experiencing. Colleagues, can we have the citizens to bring lunch first? I think it's well. Yes, well.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Okay.